Ronan, could you think about the whole the wrestling that Yaakov between Yaakov and the Ish?
No.
You mean something should indicate it to us?
Yeah, you can see here, you're asking like a big thing, explaining this big area to me, you know, it's fine, it's a legitimate question, but I'm just saying, you know, in a shit like this, we, you know, you're sort of specific, it's more, you know, a particular question, because, you know, you have some facts, and this, that, and you want like an explanation, that's more doable. That's a big Indian, you see right away, it's a Maharan and Bula. It's a Maharan and Bula, it's something which is not even... That itself tells you something. You know, you want to explain it to Bula. That's the time. And you want, what does it mean? What's the angel? What's the Sarshal Aser? What's going on? That's like a different kind of Indian. Which is certainly, I'm not saying it's not legitimate, but it's different types of questions.
Okay, what about the Indian with Yaakov's name being changed? Like, Rebbe spoke about during the high holidays about what that means to have someone's name changed. What does it mean here? How does it play out? What was Yaakov's change of purpose? Supposedly why did he change his name?
Tied in with the whole Indian of the
Nebuah,
of the wrestling, and so on and so forth.
Same part, okay.
Part of it, you know, that's what happens right immediately after, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
What about this Devorah? That the pasuk just has one pasuk on this Devorah that dies. It just, you know, Rashi doesn't, I mean, he gives an explanation, but it just seems very, very random and out of place.
The question by Gina, where was Gina when Esau came? So Rashi says, I mean, apparently he's giving pshat, like he doesn't say it's in Medrash, he just says, like a pshat, he says, where is Gina? She was in a box, and because Yosef...
Let me get the place. Give me the verses. Yitzchak, we want, you know, Derek and
Yitzchak. Oh, okay, fine. So it's in the beginning, it's,
Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Chaf Gimel Rashi.
So... Chav Gimel.
Who?
It's, let's see, Chav Gimel. Chav Gimel, Chav Gimel, yeah. He's a Chavasar Yiladah.
Oh, the Dina Hayesah.
Right.
That's not the table of the Nachma Menot for now. Or you think about Esau's Eno. Lachain Nena Shiago.
Right.
Mona.
Me'afabit. Yeah. Yeah.
Tamatak Yireno. Pamuta.
Yeah.
The Nachma Biyachem.
Yeah.
It is a very, very, very challenging Rashi. Hopefully, put that on hold. Have you guys thought about this at all? And analyze it. And we can analyze it together. Troubled me. I can give you anything else, but I'm not guaranteeing that we'll have an answer if you want to do that.
Yeah, I think the Sforno makes the comment that Yaakov, you know, as Yaakov sends all these gifts and tries to appease Esau, that that's the approach that, I guess, Judaism has to take in order to, be successful against the other nations, that we should use a philosophy of, I guess, appeasement. Whereas if you examine history, appeasement is usually looked down upon, especially in the past, you know, century where it, you know, appeased Hitler, and it seems like a philosophy of appeasement is usually unsuccessful. So why would we be advised to use that in general?
That's a good question.
Well, who says we're advised to use appeasement in general?
Is that Ben?
What?
Was that Ben who asked the question?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. All right, that's a good question.
If you're on that.
Are you on that?
Maybe
Yaakov meets Esav somewhere.
Yeah, it seems like what?
Well, did it here on this particular question? I don't think so. I know that it came here on the area in general. I mean, by Yitzhak. It's here that J.K., you know the day, but he gave a very interesting shear. He gave a very interesting shear on the whole issue of anti-Semitism. From the Torah point of view, based upon Rashi, in Lavan Yarki, I guess somebody asked that question. The Lavan Yarki Va'echa Arata, the message that he sent to Esav, which was a very important message. And the Rashi and that in Lavan Yarki, the Tariag Mitzvah Shamarti. So, the question on that is that what kind of a message is that to Esav? Why would he care? What is the point behind it? So, why would Esav be interested in the fact that he kept the mitzvot, because that he lived in Lavan Yarki, that he lived with Lavan, and he kept the mitzvot, Tariag mitzvot, but only modest in the mouth of Orion. So who cares? What does that have to do with Esav? Esav is a Russian. He doesn't respect that.
No.
So, I mean, again, it's not the same question as the Ephesian question, but it seems to be a similar kind of thing. Like, according to Rashi, he's using a strategy which, on the surface, it doesn't seem to have any significance. Why would that impress anybody? As we were saying, gave it here in terms of the whole idea of anti-Semitism. Okay. What did you guys say? Why did I get into that?
He was asking about the approach of Esav and, right?
Esav. Yeah, of Yaakov appeasing Esav.
All right, if you want to deal with that, if the guys want to deal with that, that's a good question. In general, it's a good question. I'm happy to do it. What is this part are you talking about?
I'm looking for it, just a sec.
And meanwhile, okay, we'll do that. So let me hear what you guys have to say a little bit. Basically, in general, this is a very significant parasha in the sense that it's regarded as the model how the Jew is supposed to deal with the guy.
It's Sforno on Lamed Gimel Dalid.
Lamed Gimel
Dalid.
Yeah, I'm looking.
We have.
All right, so let me just read through that. That Esav ran towards him, He quickly changed his mind due to Yago's obedience in how he translates Hakla. Now that he sort of subjugated himself to him. This episode reflects our relationship with Esav and Esav. The seal, quote, who shall bring me down to the ground? That's an Elijah. Teaches us that we will be saved from the sort of Esav's pride through submission and gift, as our sages tell us. Regarding Achia Shimon, the curse is real and compares them to a reed which bends in the wind. As a zealot, guarding the city, follows this policy in the time of the Second Temple, our holy temple would not have been destroyed. As of Yom Kippur, Ben-Zakai testifies when he says, the Yoni, the Isban, La, Shaskina, that the Yomim amongst us did not let me. And it was, that's very, very fascinating for us. Interesting.
Yes, yeah, it's wacko.
But, first of all, it goes contrary to everybody's emotions, especially today. Especially today, very significant because, the situation is different today. I'm talking about Israel. The situation is different today than any time in the Gulf. You have to know, you can't just say that the appropriate approach, you can't just say the appropriate approach is this thing or the other thing. Because if the appropriate approach is to be servient and obedient and all of that, then what about David HaMelech? You know, what about all the shawls, you know?
Well, Rabbi, I don't think that's really a question, because...
That's a good question, just wait.
Okay.
You see that, Rebellia. And so forth. You don't see that there was an attitude of obedience or achna. So, I mean, at least on the surface, it's difficult. It's such a question. Yeah, why isn't that a question?
Oh, because you see, there is the case of Esav and B'nai Esav, the two cases that he's bringing to show obedience helps. Those are cases where we're not really ascendant, where we know that our power is weaker than that of B'nai Esav and of Esav. So when you're in that kind of situation, so no, Mincha, you know, is really, he's saying it's your best option. But with Shaul and David talking about times where we were ascendant and our power was stronger. So in that case, we don't need the Jews' appeasement.
You're saying that the Jews only fought in situations where they were superior and stronger?
No, but I'm saying that the cases where we turned to appeasement...
What about all the other...
I'm saying the cases of David and Shaul are clearly different cases.
Sorry?
I'm saying the cases of David and Shaul are clearly different cases. That's what I'm saying.
Well, then, obviously, that's the question.
I don't see those cases being proved against Swarno.
You can't just take this as being the ultimate example. It obviously requires modification, because you see many other cases where, to the contrary, the Jews were criticized for not fighting back, for not being courageous. So, fine. I'm deciding that as a kind of example. The case, by the way, with Darius was not ascendant at all. The Jews were paralyzed. The entire nation was paralyzed. But one person, David HaMelech, came forward and offered his services, and Shaul was very skeptical. So that's an interesting area to study. But who are you? You're a shepherd. He had no reputation in terms of being a fighter when he's going up against this mighty God. So to simply say that Israel was in the ascendant and he could do it is not so simple. All right. But let's stick with this. Okay. It ties into the question. I'm not saying that we can, answer all these questions in one session. Maybe we can just simply see what's going on over here and we can branch out from there. But again, let's get back, let's bring out what's the question though? Well, the question I'm raising is also too big, the only thing I'm getting into is that it seems a little complicated because in this situation we have today with Israel, the state of Israel, now we have an army, and with the Arabs, so it's a little complex. But how would you apply it to that? I mean, a lot of people have maintained it to the contrary, that we're too, we'd be going too weak if Israel was tougher, and we'd be so concerned about world opinion, and kick the Arabs out, or whatever the case may be. So we'd be much better for them. And, it's not so simple to say what's correct in terms of the Torah. Like, go back to the Torah, and what is it? What would be the... This is a paradigm over here. Because throughout history, I mean, all our names, you know, whatever got to the Sparta, they always say that this is the law of the model. Whenever the Gedolim would have an encounter with the Gaonim, they always say, is this Sparta? Does this Sparta really indicate how to behave in a situation? So what's the question? The question is that what? That this seems to be appeasement, that appeasement doesn't work? Is that the question?
Yeah, I guess that's the way you can put it.
I mean, okay, is that agreed by the guy? Before we try to answer, I mean, because sometimes, you know, like we have a response that it's not a question. It, you know, which is fine.
But as a side, the pasuk in Ovadia, what was the point of that pasuk?
Ovadia?
Yeah, the Miyo Denu Aret.
Look in the context, but it will bring you down to the ground. I guess the idea is that, that you have to have the ability to be much to the Tabakra. I don't have it in front of me, you have to look it up.
I guess the question is, like you said, you know, in light of the current
situation. The idea of bringing it down to the ground means that, well, let's put it this way, that it's clear that, in this case, it's, all right, Yaakov's strategy succeeded. But any strategy that a person undertakes, no matter how carefully it's worked out, no matter how intelligently it's worked out, there's no guarantee that it's going to succeed. It's pretty obvious that there's no guarantee, because, of course, he engaged in tefillah, obviously, but also he was prepared for war. He divided the camp in Yehoreitha. So that clearly indicates that Yaakov could not say for sure that this would succeed. So if it wouldn't succeed, he was prepared to fight if he had to. That was the last resort. Also, it indicates not just the chachma, that he approached it with chachma, but there was a certain element of perfection. You see, like, it's for the Inferno compared to the Biryonim. That even though a lot of people today would, you know, would look up to them, would admire them, that they were zealous, they fought, they wouldn't give in, they didn't care. You see, that's wrong. In that situation, that was completely wrong, and there's an emotional defect over there, and that is, there's an emotion that I won't give in to him. I mean, a lot of times people admire that. He won't give in to anybody. But that doesn't necessarily, mean that it's the right thing. It's a defect in a certain situation. But the ability, see, the way that Yaakov behaved would be a turnoff to many people today. Interestingly, the way the Torah doesn't correspond to any specific type of an emotion. Now, if the doves in Israel today would like this kind of thing. That's their emotional makeup. But the hawks, I don't think that they would like it so much. Because, you see, it wasn't just the gift. It wasn't just the bribe, so to speak. So, here's a different question. If Esav wanted to kill him, wanted to destroy him, and Yaakov was clearly weaker and inferior in terms of physical might, so how do you understand this kind of a bribe? Well, what is diplomacy, essentially, a prize, a payoff. That's what most of diplomacy is. That's what a piece of it is. You buy the guy off. The only thing is that there's another question. How can you really buy him off? Why couldn't he? What was his concept? What was his strategy? He's going to pay him off a certain amount, like a ransom. You're paying off a ransom, a protection money. You're paying protection money. But here, protection money makes sense in a certain situation. You have a gang, you have a mafia, whatever, so it's extortion. And, they're in charge. You gotta pay them the tax. But since they want a cut of your business in order to, otherwise they'll destroy it, that's really what you're protecting yourself from. You're protecting yourself from their destroying you if you don't give it to them. But still, it makes a certain sense. Because they have an incentive. Why can't they just take your money and then destroy you? They don't want to do that, because you're the goose that's wearing the gold net. But over here, why couldn't Esav just take the money? That used to bother me. Why couldn't he just take the money and have both? Well, what is the point of giving him all this bribe? He could take the entire bribe and then kill you. He could have both. There's a thing. I mean, the last thing was a rat. So what was the idea? What was the point of the?
Well, I mean, if you look at the.
What was Yaakov's objective here? Again.
It seems like if you look at, you know, the whole the story of what he tries to do, the point of the brachos was that the person who got the brachos was going to be the one who was going to be dominant in history. Since one person was going to be dominant, and the other one was going to have to serve him. So Esau, it seems like his whole thing was that he wanted to be the one who was dominant in, you know, in his life and in history. Is he wanted to be the dominant force in the world. And Yaakov was going to be taking that away from him, because that was the point of the bracha. That Yaakov was gonna take that away from Esau. So Yaakov was trying to show Esau that he's not really dominating. That Esav is still going to be the one who's dominant, so therefore there's no reason to, you know, Yaakov hasn't taken anything that Esav really cares about, because the thing that he cares about he's still going to get.
That's hard. What do you think is kind of hard?
Well, that's what he's actually going to say.
If he took away, he was dominant. In terms of being dominant, he was, was more of a force to be reckoned with than Yaakov. He had built up, he was in the process of building up a nation.
Yeah, but you see that he felt that the brachos were a reality, and that's why he wanted them. So he wasn't, it's true, in actual fact, right now, he's more, he's stronger, but you see that he respects it.
So now he was convinced that he would be dominant, he tricked him. He tricked him into believing that he really had the brachos. Well, you're saying that there's some kind of trickery going on over here.
Yeah, that's true, it doesn't all are.
I'm sorry?
Doesn't make sense, you're right.
He had the whole question worked out, which would mean that he did believe. First of all, does Asa believe or doesn't he believe? It's very difficult to get into those, to get too particular about why he was so upset about the brachos, and what the brachos, what significance they had, and all of that, is a little bit difficult at this stage, to approach the story with that. I know Rashi mentions that, you know, like Rashi says that Yaakov was indicating that the brachos have not been fulfilled in me, and so on, you know, like to remove the envy factor. But the question I'm asking is, what was the strategy? Let's keep it simpler. What was the strategy over here about the gift? And also, of course, the question as to appeasement in general. How would you differentiate between this appeasement and the appeasement of the 20th century, you know, like the famous case, of course, of Hitler, Yamach Shemam? That you teach there that appeasement doesn't work.
Alright, just think for, you know, take a little break here. Thanks.
So.
It seems like appeasement isn't a method of preventing war, more a way of procrastinating it before the skid
hangs against the sword. That's against the sword.
What exactly does he say?
It says if by shame you would still be standing now. If it was appeasement?
Yeah.
Obviously, he can't do that for sure, but he's saying that it's a long term solution. Obviously, you can't question you're really just saying that someone else can want to show up, you know, in spite of that. But he's saying that appeasement is really some kind of solution. I mean, it's hard to say he means it's just a temporary fix. And then you should basically go to war, you know.
Well, it seems to be, there's definitely a difference between the appeasement that Yaakov offered Esav and the appeasement that goes on today. By Yaakov, it was just it was a first step. You know, he still did prepare for war. He still did, you know, pray to God. But it was definitely the first step that he had to take before, you know, going to war, before having to take that, you know, having to go out to war with Esav. But nowadays, that is the plan. Just appeasement. We'll just give you what you want, but we won't plan. You know, we won't back that up.
This was the first step, and what was the second and third step? That he was going to fight him.
Well, he did prepare for war.
That's only if it failed.
Right, no, that's not...
Yeah, but the sport was saying, wow. It's a good strategy.
Just he was stone.
He was like, still no, but it's still
a good strategy. No, it's like, then Tila would be the second step.
It wasn't a two-step thing, it was a one-step thing. It was his main strategy was appeasement. That was the main plan. But, in case it would fail, then he prepared. You know, he divided the camp. It's interesting, I mean, well, again, you can go further, because in mind another thing. It's very, very important. To study the Tukum over here, what do you notice about the so-called diplomacy, the gift, the bride, so to speak, Doron? What do you notice about it that's interesting? Just pique your interest. What does the Torah emphasize in such detail, the presentation? Isn't the presentation the whole thing?
Isn't it to show you that the whole thing was in the Chachma?
I know it was in the Chachma, but we have to find out what exactly that Chachma was. The way he arranged it, that Revach Tassimu Ben Eidu, he gave instructions. Revach Tassimu. The way it was organized, like all the different things that he presented to him, but it wasn't just that you present the check, here's a check. That's not, normally bribery works differently. Bribery, ransom, we're not interested in how you present it. You just say, what's the sum? What is it? 10 million? 20 million? How is it going to be delivered? In a bank? Is it wired to an account? And that's it. Nobody's interested in how you present it. It's just the transfer. Here, to the contrary, it's, by the way, one can ask another question, and that is that it seems that Esav had a lot, had more than Yaakov. And that's you have that whole thing over there that Esav says, because Esav even refuses to take it. You know, generally speaking, one would ask, you make an assessment, and you want to pay somebody off, you're going to make something which you really, really want. I mean, my question still remains, by the way, that he could have taken everything and killed him anyway. So the whole plan, generally speaking, when you have these kinds of things, the payoffs and all, each side protects itself. That, you give me what I want. That's the biggest thing in the negotiation. If it's a hostage and you want a ransom, you don't just give him the money and then trust him that he'll give up the hostage. You know, you start to release the hostage in a neutral place and I give the money in a neutral place and then, the money is transferred as the hostage is being released. I don't trust you. What if you just take the money and kill the hostage anyway? And also, don't you begin to question whether he really needs it? Esav was very wealthy, and in fact, he doesn't want to take it. He says, he doesn't even want to take it. The truth is, it's so successful that it works even without taking it, because at that point in time, he doesn't even want it. All right, so Yaakov insists, whatever you want to say, maybe, I would take it at face value. I mean, he was sincere, I believe, Esav, when he said that he doesn't want it, but he has rav, he has a lot. Then Yaakov insisted, no, he took it. But another question is, and if that's even a more basic question, what is it that succeeded? Was it the bounty? Was it the Doron? That's funny, because it achieved its goal without even Esav taking it. That's pretty successful. But it doesn't make sense, because if the strategy is to pay a guy off, then I don't assume it's going to work without the guy even taking the money, which is what happened over here. It worked. It worked. Yaakov had his reasons for insisting. I mean, you could ask that as a question. Once Esav made up with him, why did he insist upon giving him the money? He was fine. And in fact, he insisted he didn't want it. These are the kind of questions you have to analyze. You have to go to the area and get more specific. Let me see. And let's take a look at the elements of the presentation, because the can describe it. It's interesting. It's after the vua with the malach, the wrestling. Then you have the gidanasha. Then you have the isi yakavena, and so Esav coming with 400 men. Okay. And then he made his division. He divided the children with Leah and Rachel and the two shvachos. And look at how careful he was with the order. Well, why is it so important? He put the shvachos and their children first, then Leah and her children next. And Rachel and Yosef were last. And then he went in front of them, and he bowed down seven times, until he arrived at his brother. And by the And Ace of Rand, that's also instructive. Why does it mention that Ace of Rand towards him? What was that to? Well, it works, whatever. Now, in terms of the arrangement of the animals, it's put down on a lot of days. The variety of the puzzle that goes into it. Ezim, Masayim, Gushim, Esrim, Mechelim, Masayim, the Elim, Esrim, and so on, Gamalim. And then he placed it in the hands of the Levadim, Ezer, Levados. Each block separate. And he said to Bayom Levadim, Ibru Lefanav, but I go before me, the Relach Tassimu Ben Ezer Ben Ezer. So basically it was a big presentation. Because you had different waves, so to speak. You had the servants, the servants of Yaakov with the various animals and the way they were arranged. They went first, and they were the first ones to encounter Esau. And he instructed them on what to tell Esau. For me, I know the other when they would encounter Esau first. Today he would ask the question, who are you, whose are you and where are you headed? And to whom are these in front of you? And you should say, Yavdechol Yaakov, that these are from Yaakov, Mincha Yishlucha, it is a gift that he's sending, Vardoni Va'esav, to my master, to Esav. Interesting, he refers to him always as his master. Vehine Gamu Acharenu. And he gamu, vine gamu acharenu. Then gamas hasheni, gamas hashlishi. God, this is very important. Gamas es kol hochem acharei adam lemor, kadavar zes es davar alesav, b'mo tzachem ozo. Amartem gam hine yavdecha yagam acharenu. And so forth. He's mentioning that fact, that he instructs them what to do, and prepares them what the questions will be that Esau will ask, what to tell them. And every one of them, there's a bunch of different groups over here, have to answer this way, but also it's very important to say, V'amartem gam hine avdecha Yaakov acharenu. And he refers to the fact that Yaakov is coming as well, and to refer to him as avdecha, your eved. Yeah, now the first thing explains basically is that's crucial. That's in Chavalos, Lamed Beis Chavalos. Yamar, Achap Rapanav, Amincha Haolechas Lapanai, Yachrechein Erapanav, Ulai Yisapanai. That's very, very crucial. Because this is explaining what his strategy was. Now the question is, one second, when you read the passage, are the words Ki Amar a continuation of what they should say? In other words, Amartem and you should say, Gamei Yavdecha, this is what the messenger should say. Gamei Yavdecha Yaakov Acharenu, Ki Amar. Is Ki Amar part of what they should say? Or is that, no? It's not part. But now, Ki Amar is an explanation of what Yaakov has said.
And say to Esau.
I'm sorry?
Obviously, Ki Amar isn't what they're going to say to Esau. That would be crazy.
Really? Well, it's a fun word that way. Sorry, that's my focus. There's two ways to learn. Okay.
I mean, you like tell that, you know,
it's to what
the word is, the strategy shouldn't be manifest.
Commit to saying something crazy, you got to give them. Again, what?
Because it seems like the whole strategy was to try when you're trying to create nose upon him with someone, when you're trying to get someone to be nose upon him, you don't tell them you're trying to get them to be nose upon him.
Yeah, I would agree with you. First of all,
you never say, look, you know, I'm going to try to buy you off. I mean, you try to show the guy the power of your position with money.
Yeah, you're right. That's ostensibly, superficially, I think it's correct. And as I said, there's two chasms. So the more difficult, the harder you write. I mean, it's not that important to me. We can take the simple shot of Kiyama, because that's certainly correct. That's certainly correct. That was the idea. Now, whether he actually expressed that idea to Aesop, or whether it means to say that this is... You have to understand from the structural aspect, in terms of where it fits into the pasuk, it seems to be more like the Sferno. That's very strange to interrupt it, but at that point, it's telling you what Yaakov was thinking. It's just not the place for it. However, the others learned that, no, that it doesn't make sense that they would say this. That perhaps you're right, perhaps correct, that... Macaulay, they said it makes sense, you know, it seems correct, because usually when you're using a strategy to appease someone, and that the whole point is to be silent about that, to make it look real and sincere, you don't express that. The other person might sense it. But nevertheless, when you try to make up with someone, and you're giving them a gift or whatever it is, so, you know, the other person may know. I mean, it's a show of respect or whatever it is. The other person is not stupid. He understands, but he's willing to go along with it. But to actually say it, that you're bribing me, I'm bribing you because I want to get such and such from you, it obviously diminishes the effect. Okay. Whatever. Let's assume that it's an expression of what Yaakov's thoughts were. Because that's definitely true. So therefore, what is our understanding now of what's going on over here? Gan Yaakov. It keeps telling him, I know that Yaakov is coming. What do you see from that, and how does this reflect upon the entire idea? The entire idea of the Matana. And how does it answer my question that even if you say that he was weak, the whole idea of a bribe in this case seems to be useless because since they could destroy him, or if he could just take it and then kill you. So what did you gain? All right, hang on for about a minute, fellas, and think about it, all right? I have to leave the room for about a minute. Let's come up with it. Can you think of a precedent in any other situation that might shed light on this? Fellas, anything there? Hello?
Yeah.
Anything?
Maybe by Purim?
Good. What do you have in mind?
Because they politically...
No, I'm thinking about the Megillah.
Esther to Ahasuerus?
No, I'm thinking, well, I don't know, maybe you have something. But I was thinking that, what about, Haman and Mordechai? Like, why did he go so far? Why did he get the whole story of Purim revolves around the fact that, Mordechai, lo yichlev, lo yishachaneh, and he was filled with rage. Calls him on, he was at that party, after the party, when he gets together with his wife and advisors, he's telling him about all of his greatness and his kavod and this and that, and every time he sees Mordechai Yehudi, Yoshe Meshav below come below Zah, and he doesn't show any respect, says that all this is worthless to me. Can't take it. That's what I have in mind. Does that ring a bell?
In that case, Haman understood that he respected, he understood Mordechai as a chacham, and he saw the fact that Mordechai won't be nosed upon him towards him, is because of the fact that Mordechai understands that all the stuff that Haman is involved in is really like a very base idolatrous kind of thing.
You see that even, how does that even work over here though? Okay, you're correct. In other words, even somebody like Haman, who's a Russia, and he needs everybody's adulation and respect and all that is really worthless because it's meaningless to him.
One Chacham stands up to him.
One Chacham represents the truth. You can't escape from that.
Right.
He's trying to create an artificial world of truth. That's an element of truth. So it's an artificial world in which he's a great person. So as long as everybody goes along with it, he can fool himself. But then you find one Mordecai is a Yehudi, because he really represents reality. Even someone recognizes that, he can't tolerate it. He has to destroy him. Now, in my opinion, I think there's a similarity over here. Esav was a complex character. And I'm not going into all the ideas of what the brachos meant, and there's many factors, but I think you do see that he had a tremendous need for the approval of the tzaddik. That's why he was Makayan Kibidav. And he said even after when he had the hatred for Yaakov, that he would wait until his father died, that was an extremely important element to him, to have the approval. I think that's always an important element with any Russian. But the most important thing is ego. And he's always in a conflict, because he has to feel that he's great, that he's a great person. So it seems to me, and I'm talking in general terms, obviously there's more to it, I'm not saying this explains everything, but I think this is a very significant factor, that Yaakov understood that part of his hatred was because he felt that Yaakov despised him. But Yaakov was a tzaddik. There's a certain recognition of that Yaakov was someone who lived in accordance with the ideals. He's a tzaddik, and every Russia feels that the true, because he knows, the Esav knows what he is, that he's an instinctual of a being, and that he's base, and that the sense that Yaakov would look down upon him. And he really needed the approval of Yaakov. In my opinion, that was the whole idea of the strategy over here. To convince him that, to the contrary, that he didn't look down upon him, but that he looked up to him, that he respected him, that he was Avdecha, and that was the whole idea. It wasn't the money or the material thing at all. Because, as I said, that he simply could have taken and killed him. It wasn't a payoff. Nor would, if that were the case, the whole idea of how he organizes it, that the play, the way he presents it, the presentation, it was kavod, it was the honor behind it, and how he instructed his servants to speak. Because this was not easy to accomplish. This was not easy to accomplish, because he's not a fool. Esav is not a fool. So you can't just fool somebody. You try to flatter somebody, you want to flatter a wealthy, powerful politician or whatever it is. They're not fools. But the point of it is, though, that they are vulnerable. They are vulnerable to being fooled, so to speak. Something Ramban points out, that when he tells them to refer, Avdecha Yaakov, he tells them about Avdecha Yaakov, is he just telling his servants to refer to him as Avdecha, when they speak to him, or is he actually saying that, he's referring to himself as in front of the servants? And he says that it could be that he's referring to himself, because he wants them to see that he really regards himself that way, so they should be very sincere in the communication of this point. The Russia, a guy like Esav, you can't fool people, they're not stupid. But they can, he offers, but can. You can convince them of a point, provided that you're able to put aside all of your emotions and do it completely and wholeheartedly without holding anything back. So usually when a person is doing something begrudgingly, so they'll do it, and they'll pay money, this, that, but it won't come across. The sincerity will not come across. Yaakov realized that the most crucial element over here was the sincerity. And in order to be completely sincere, there has to be absolute achna. He has to divest himself of any type of ego in the situation, why do I have to do this, and what do you see, and all of these contrary emotions, to be completely in line with the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation was that he faced a situation of great danger. That goes to the issue in terms of we raised at the beginning. And there are times when you're in the matzav of Yaakov versus Esav. So we can't prevail in terms of military force, and there's no way. And the only way is to adopt the achna. But the imperfection was that was the teaching. They were imperfect people. They weren't like Yaakov. They didn't follow Yaakov Avinu. He was perfected. believes that he would the world has this crazy idea. No, he's tough. He has never given in, or he's a weakling because he gives in. Either way, that's absurd. The question is, what's the reality of the situation?
Ready?
One second, I'm finished. Okay. So in terms of the reality of the situation, this was a time when the only thing that you could work for was this type of appeasement, so to speak. Appeasement in the sense of achieving a certain type of a change of attitude. That's why it's different than appeasement in the 20th century. The appeasement in the 20th century is absurd. It's like a lion, he's a beast of prey, and you're defeating yourself into thinking you're accepting what he's saying. Hitler is claiming that he's not out to destroy the world, it's just a legitimate phenomenon, and he's entitled to this piece of land, the other thing, and that's not the truth. You refuse to face the fact that he wants more and more and more, so you're deceiving yourself. It's based upon a delusion, so that's appeasement. You give him more. It's like the Arabs, you want to believe that they're involved in this thing about legitimate rights and self-determination, all these things which are absolute nonsense. There's no concept of any kind of rights or democracy or anything, any Western values, and it's just a ploy. You want to believe that, that's appeasement, that's absurdity. Here it's different. Here it's a recognition of the mindset of the opponent. And what exactly is the cause of the problem over here, and what's the motivation that he has to kill you? The motivation over here is not that you're a threat to him, not that you're stronger than him, it's a hatred. It's a hatred, it's a sinner. It's a sinner because Esav is always going to be a son of Yaakov because he perceives that Yaakov is superior. Yaakov has something that he doesn't have, and he needs that. But he feels hated, he feels despised. And there are times when you have to show the cover. That essentially, I believe, that's why the Gam, that Yaakov did it in such a manner that he was overwhelmed, he was overcome. Because that's all the psukim can do now. That's why it describes it this way. It was a whole procedure, and everything has to be done properly, and time is needed. The Rebach says he will, because you can't just bring about that kind of a change of heart quickly. You got to work on the person's psychology, and he has to be convinced. He has to be convinced that it's absolutely sincere. When that happened, when he said that's one of the seven kriyas, Gam, he was primed. You see the Chachmat Yaakov. Everything was done in a manner to show that this is MS, that he really looks up to him, that he really wants to be with him, and this was a matana to him. Based upon his respect for him. That wasn't a bribe. It was a matana which was based upon the respect, the esteem in which he holds him. And that's why the final thing was the seven kriyos, that he bowed down to him seven times. Then, you see, by Yarat, he really worked on his emotions, that he ran to him, and he hugged him, and he kissed him. Well, what does that mean? That means he had tremendous love. And that's an interesting machlokas haval. That if that is, one side says that at that point he had a complete change of heart. Others say no, it was just for the moment. And Rashi brings it down, if I'm not mistaken. You have the Rashi over there?
Yeah.
That's in Lamed Gimel. We just did that. That's Lamed Gimel Dalet.
Yeah.
Was supposed to run.
Yeah.
Rashi, when he got Kev, his Dalgul Rachamah, all of his mercy, all of his positive thing, his feelings of compassion were brought out. He said, Ra'ol Mishtachavah, call Mishtachavah Halalu. But he's from bowing. The bowings are very, very significant. Aisha, you? There's different pshatas. Yesha Darshan Akuda, because there's das on top. Lomash Lanashka Bachalibo. Some say he did not kiss him with all of his heart. Tony Liato. Rav Shimon Yochai said it's halacha, so to speak, it's like a law, that Esav is Tony Liato. Ela shenichlu rachma b'yosa shah. V'nashka b'chol riba. B'chol riba. See? That's a machlokas. That, you know, the thing that he hates him. But at that moment, he kissed him with a full heart. He kissed him. Now, in my opinion, that was the, that answers the question that we set out, to deal with. That was the strategy, of Yaakov. That Yaakov's task was to convince Esau that he really respected him, that he did not despise him, but to the contrary, he had tremendous respect for him. That was the ride. It was an emotional phenomenon. It was not a question of just paying him off, but that would not have worked at all. To the contrary. He didn't really have a need for this money. All of this was to provide him. Yaakov recognized that deep down he really needed his approval, in my opinion, and his respect. He looked up to Yaakov. Of course, he can't admit that. But that's the same is true with Haman. He looked up to Mordechai. Obviously, he couldn't admit that.
That's an unconscious thing, right?
I'm sorry?
It's an unconscious thing.
It's an unconscious thing, yeah, of course. But you see, this tremendous effect. But the perfection of Yaakov is how he achieved it. And how he achieved it, it's not just the plan. It's the ability to carry out the plan. The ability to be completely nichna in a situation which demands it. And that's the real greatness. A person has to always evaluate the situation. So that, again, that answers the other question. Do you see, David HaMelech acted differently? That was a different situation. Can you say in general that it's too vague to just say that Israel, that the Jews were in the ascendancy at that point? Because there were times when they weren't, but they fought anyways. I mean, yeah, you have to make these evaluations as to when you have to fight, when that's the correct thing to do, and when Achna is the correct thing to do. In the situation of the destruction of the bias by the Romans, so Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was convinced that it was this, that it was zealousness, that was their yonim, that it wasn't really because of a genuine Avat Hashem, it was a crazy emotion. A lot of people have this crazy emotion, they're just going to fight till the Alamo, we're just going to fight to the last day, we're not going to give in. Yeah, there are occasions when you have to fight and give up your life. That's the heart of Yahweh when it comes to Avodah Zarah. That's the case of Mordechai. Mordechai, you know, you're talking about. And he was prepared to risk everything. You can't have you can have a simplistic formula over here. You can't follow a particularistic kind of an emotion. It all has to be in terms of the truth of the situation, in terms of the chachma. So basically, I would say that. I'm going to give a different shot now. I mean, I just in terms of Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti is very crucial in terms of this phenomenon, that basically he's still Yaakov, that he's the same person, he wasn't changed, he's still the person that lives purely in accordance with the idealism, with the Torah, with the truth. That's very crucial, because that's what Esav was looking for. He was looking for his approval on that level, that because he was Yaakov, and he wanted to let him know that he hasn't changed, and he's still the same person. So that same emotion within Esav is still intact, still needs gratification. Okay, what did you want to ask?
Why would he want to let him, first of all, just on that, why would he want to let him know he's still the same person?
I'm just trying to tell you, because that was the whole strategy. That deep within him, there was a need, there was a superego, there was an ideal of the Tzaddik.
Right.
That was Yitzchak. That was Father Yitzchak, and that was Yaakov. Yaakov
right.
was the Tzaddik.
So why tell him I'm the super, why tell him I'm, you know, the superego?
Because that's what I'm trying to tell you. That's exactly the strategy.
Oh, so the superego approval.
I'm sorry?
Okay, I understand.
Yeah, otherwise, you just kill him. I hate the guy.
Right.
I hate the guy. And, well, why should I change my position?
Right.
And he had less respect for him, to the contrary.
Right.
You have to understand that deep within him, I mean, that's part of Aikeshi on the other intelligence. It's connected to what he's saying, that It's very, because that was the whole idea. I don't want to give away that whole chair now. I mean, you know, that's a chair, so I always throw it out. But, see, a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that when the Jews will stop, you know, living as Jews and start to assimilate and be like the Goyim, then the Goyim will lose their hatred. Okay, so a little hint, that Rashi indicates the contrary, it's the opposite. That strange as they seem, even anti-Semites, so when they were the Jews, stick to the Torah and their ideals and their principles, they respect them more, or they hate them less. So however you want to put it, it is much worse in terms of anti-Semitism for the Jew to try and pretend that he's like everybody else. It's much better if he sticks to the Torah. Okay? Well, that's a general idea. But I'm just trying to link it to the shot of what went on over here and what the idea of the gift was. It wasn't the gift in terms of the money is going to change it. That would be absurd. Nothing makes sense. But what I'm saying is that's why the Gam of the Chayakov. After every group, he prepares the Gam of the Chayakov. That was the whole thing. It was the fact that he presented himself to Esav as Av the Chayakov. That won him over emotionally. He's a creature of emotion. And you see, by us, he ran towards him. By Shekel, and then afterwards, he doesn't want the money. And then afterwards, he wants to travel with him. Yaakov didn't want to travel with him. But look at that's what it did. It effectuated an emotional change. Okay, but you see the tremendous perfection. And you see that in the situation today, which is very complex, I mean, because now we're still in the exile, but there is a state and there is a Jewish army, that, again, they have this group, it's, certain mentality, whether the settlers, whatever it is, this is our way, throw them out, we can't be nichmas to them. Then you have the other group, which is, no, we have to be respectful and compromised. Either side is based purely upon a certain emotion. And that's not the correct way. What the correct way is, I mean, this is not a political force here right now. Without the ability to be nichna, without the ability to be perfected, and to analyze what the situation requires, A, and B, to have the emotional perfection to be able to act in line with it, then you can't succeed. Okay, fellas.
Rebbe?
Yes.
I have a question.
All right.
All right, thanks. We see, though, another trend in history, I mean, which is that they're always going to hate the Jew because of the fact that the Jew, his whole life, is an indictment of their not following the truth.
Okay, so now
I thought you were saying that that's, you know, that he's giving Esau like a super ego approval in order so that he won't have that unconscious hatred manifest itself.
Right.
But isn't Esau going to see in the end that Yaakov is really following the true life?
You just can't. Hey, look, we're not talking about the end. We're talking about...
Right now.
We're talking about a confrontation between the two of them.
Temporarily it'll work. It'll work temporarily.
In fact, maybe that's why Yaakov separated. Esau wanted to stay with him. He wanted him to travel together with him.
And he separated because he'll see that our life is superior, and that'll make him jealous.
Yeah, it could be right that, Yaakov didn't count on the fact that this would last forever. We're talking about an encounter. We're talking about a situation. That's the Remach of Simu Ben Eidu Ben Eidu. Yaakov say. That's a reference, a distance. It means that there'll be a Remach. There'll be anti-Semitic occurrences, but there'll always be a little respite, so to speak, between them. So, I mean, I'm not talking about ultimate solutions. We're analyzing one encounter. Okay, guys.
Rebbe? Rabbi? Yochanan Ben Zakkai, he said that the Bai Sheni would still be standing. Apparently that wasn't going to be a temporary thing, that you could appease Rome.
Oh, yeah, you could appease Rome, get through that, and then who knows what can happen. Yeah, of course.
But if they don't look too closely at what the Jew is.
Be there forever? No, none of these empires will be there forever. They're all limited in time, and then you'll deal with them. He's just a tzara. It's a temporary phenomenon. The thing was, you got to be nifty and deal with it. And so, then if the Jews return to Torah or whatever, you're making too many calculations. We don't know the future. You got to deal with the situation. There's no permanent solution in that respect. This was the encounter with Rome. And he couldn't say that. He wasn't going to say that if they would have acted correctly, the base of English would be forever. How do you know? Maybe the next generation would have made a mistake. But what he meant, the base of it would have been saved then. That's your goal. And hopefully the next generation will do the right thing. If every generation did the right thing, the base of it would still be standing.
So, as long as Rome doesn't look too closely at who we are.
No, I'm not getting into that. You know, you're taking me in a totally different direction. I'm not interested in going that far. I'm just making... That was a mistake. The mistake was to incite them so that they destroyed you. He held that you could have dealt with them and they would have destroyed you. You could have had a better situation. Now, what would happen after that? I don't know. You know, you got to see. Yeah, you're asking too many questions over here. That's not the issue. We'll do it. Acted correctly. Let's say the situation changed, and Rome got weaker, and the empire was falling apart, which in fact did happen, so then maybe the time would be to attack. I don't know. But this was the situation then. And the situation then called to be for Achna, and the Jews failed that test. That's all. 20 seconds. Okay?
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.